Subway has teamed up with Live Nation to bring you great food and great music for a great value. Right now, buy a Subway $5 footlong and get a Live Nation concert ticket for $5 to participating Live Nation shows like Nickelback, The Fray, and Crew Fest 2. Ticket price does not include fees. See store for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. A guest so good, we had to split him into two parts. We cut him right in half with a butter knife. And he's back.
Butter.
He's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, but in person, in the studio. The creator of South Park, co-creator, Matt Stone.
Co-creator. That's me.
I wanted to ask you about the after 9/11.
Yes.
When were you guys scheduled to come back?
I don't know. We have to look up the exact dates. I think we had our show on in October. I think we were on about 5 or 6 weeks after 9/11.
So that week, what were you guys thinking? Were you like, wow, South Park's done. Nobody will ever want to laugh at a comedy again? Or were you thinking, are we going to be able to touch this? Like, what was the thought process?
I mean, it's hard to put everyone back in that. Those few weeks after where you're just like, oh my God, you know, like all the late night guys were like not being funny or off the air. No, I mean, we knew that we had to do something. We knew we were going back on the air. We knew that like by the time it was 5 or 6 weeks. So a few other people had ventured in. So we were,
the onion,
we were the
SNL
first.
SNL kind of came in.
Yeah. I think Jon Stewart had been back on and Gilbert Gottfried had done his thing at the roast and you know, that I think that had already happened maybe.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. We remember just being like, well, we have to do something about this. Like, there's no way you could just come back and be like, you know,
your first
Wendy
episode.
Won't invite me to the dance. You know, and you just couldn't do like that. You had to, the world had changed. And so you had to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we did an episode about it. That was like, was Osama bin Laden.
You were looking for
as
him,
farty pants. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kids go to Afghanistan and we did like a Warner Brothers, like an homage to the Warner Brothers war cartoons, a lot of which have been kind of like you can't get anymore because they have kind of racist.
Oh.
They're the racist Japanese stereotypes in there. They have Tojo.
Yeah.
And there's ones with Hitler and Tojo. And Tojo has like these big, thick, you know, it's just complete Japanese Asian stereotype. These big buck teeth and these big old Coke bottle glasses. And you know, they're racist, and so that's why, you know, Warner Brothers doesn't really want people seeing them now, because they are. I mean, they're like, they're kind of like have these terrible old stereotypes, but they're, when you put yourself back in 1943 or 1944, you're like, what better, more empowering thing to take this, you know, Hitler or Tojo or something that's just so frightening, or Osama bin Laden was in September, you know, in October 2001, and just fart in his face and make fun of him like it's a camel riding, you know, blah, blah. And it's like, yes, it's stereotypical and it's racist in some ways, but like, you know, you gotta get back. You have to get a psychological edge, you know what I mean? Or something. So we didn't do as much of the racist stuff, but it was like, we did the homage to like, yeah, like let's go fart in that guy's face. Let's go turn him into a cartoon character and, you know, beat him up.
Was that the most anticipated episode you guys have had? Or was there?
Well, I don't know about anticipated, but.
Well, yeah. You guys have been coming off a layoff.
People yeah, maybe.
I'm excited to see how.
What the hell
I know
gonna,
I was.
What the hell are they going to do?
What are they going to do?
Yeah,
how are they
going to
approach this?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. People always do that. We put too much pressure on us now, on ourselves now about like, oh God, we're coming back like last year. It's like, we got to do something about the economy or, you know what I mean? It's like, cause that's what everyone's talking about. And we always do better when we just do something like this last run. Actually, the last one we started with the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah.
This episode. And like before that, I was the one. I was like, dude, we're not starting. I said, we're not starting with the Jonas Brothers. That's stupid. Let's do like, we have to do something meaty. You know what I mean? And Trey was like, this Jonas Brothers thing is funny and that's all that matters. And he was totally right. And it was like, yeah, we came out of the gate with just a really funny episode. It had some hardcore stuff in it, but it was like, it was just funny.
Well, you guys have, it doesn't seem like you enjoy it that much. Like, I mean, I'm not saying you don't enjoy doing things. I'm saying you're never satisfied. You're always feeling like what's next? What's the next one? What's the next one? And
right.
You've said yourself, like, sometimes you just, like, wow, I wish I enjoyed this a little more, right?
In the moment, you mean? Yeah. Like the actual producing?
The actual moment of when you're banging out these shows.
Yeah, that's not, sometimes it's enjoyable. I guess the enjoyable part is the idea part, just being in the writer's room, coming up with an idea. Yeah, the spitballing is the most fun.
Well, and you guys then, do a writer's retreat where you take some of your favorites and you go to some city and you just hang out for 5 days.
We just hole up in a hotel and hang out and try to think of funny stuff.
Yeah.
We just did that in Boston, actually,
this last
time. And no, that's really fun. But the actual staying until midnight and actually making it work, or, you know, it'll be a funny joke, but when you actually see it animated, you're like, that's not funny. Or like that take's wrong or that tone is wrong. That stuff gets pretty brutal.
Has the technology made the show like significantly easier to do or not that much easier?
Yes. Easier. And also now we can we can produce better stuff in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, the technology's unbelievable. Like what is possible now as compared,
in 97. Ugh.
Compared to 97, yeah. I was like, this happened this summer. In 1997, we animated the show on these things called SGI workstations. They were like specialized graphics, it's like a dedicated graphics computer that only Pixar used it, or, Disney Animation. They were like a desktop computer, but they were like, the cheapest one was like $25,000.
Right.
And we had like six of them to do our show on, right? I was walking in New York this summer, and I literally saw a pile of those machines, like 30 of those machines on the sidewalk in New York, like just trash, just like somebody take these. And they were in 1997, 98, they were $20,000-$25,000 boxes. And
wow.
Now they're literally trash. Like you wouldn't even want, just get rid of, just it's less than free.
It must be easy to like get email. Like, what'd you do in 97 for emailing clips or like, hey, what do you think of this little, like you couldn't have even downloaded the video back then.
No. It was like, yeah, we did on VHS and delivered on tape and everything. Yeah. Seems like a zillion years ago.
The other interesting thing is that you guys have maintained complete control over the show. Cause a lot of times people have a show, it works, whatever. And then they're like, all right, let's pass this baby off.
Right.
And we'll just bank the checks.
No, I mean, there was a point when about, probably 4 or 5 years into South Park when we'd move to network. You know, that's what Mike Judge did. You know, and he's like the only guy at the time still was like, well, what did Mike Judge do? Like, he's kind of like us, but before us. And, and so like Mike had gone and done Beavis and Butthead and then gone and done King of the Hill.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you do your dumb cable thing and then you move on to your big thing and it's more important and it makes you more money and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, this is college and now you go on to the big leagues or whatever.
Yeah.
Or that was the thought. And we did our group of meetings and it was just like such a farce. Like me and Trey sitting in a meeting, actually with ABC, I remember the ABC meeting and they're like, so, what shows do you watch on our network? And we're like, Monday Night Football. And like, I don't even know what's on your network. I don't watch any network TV. You know, I just don't, it's not us. I think that, you know, the success of South Park made people think we were more mainstream than we were. And,
well, your name probably got thrown around in meetings. Like, well, let's do something edgy. What about the South Park guys?
Yeah.
Well, let's bring them in for a meeting.
Yeah. And then they'll be like, yeah, you know, we had this guy the other day. I mean, you can do anything on our network. It's really loosened up, you know, and you're sitting there going, uh-huh. And he's like, I mean, the other day, I don't know if you saw like a Courtney Jim or some crappy show. And he's like, he was just farting. It was like a whole thing. It was like a fart and it was about a fart. And you're like, oh my God. Guys, like, so you're like, you can do whatever you want. And we're doing stuff like abortion and like priest rape and like
Tourette's syndrome.
And Tourette's and like whatever, you know, like that's what we do. Like we're interested in that stuff. It makes us laugh.
Yeah.
It's like not farts, dude. Dude, farts. Come on. You know, like.
You're like, really?
Oh, really? We can have our character fart and then not call it a fart? But at that time, we just decided, let's just stay with South Park and kind of double down. And
well,
this will be what our thing. And it was the best. That moment, it was 4 or 5 years into South Park was, and you know, there was a lot of, not pressure, but there was a lot of voices going, you know, around us going, yeah, you should probably move to network. It's time, you know, we didn't. And I'm so glad we didn't. It was one of the best decisions of our lives. It really was. It was like a little bit lucky and a little bit, we just were like, oh, let's just stay here. And we know this. And now what's happened is cable TV has gotten even more important and more competitive with network TV. We've got to do whatever we want still. And the more success we have, the more they're just like, just do whatever you want. You know, we're our own boss. When we do a movie, Trey, we negotiate for final cut. Trey's the director, gets final cut. So we don't have to deal with that, you know? And it's just like, you get all that stress out of your life and you can just do what you want. You know, it's really, 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 really fortunate.
Creatively, obviously a lot more appealing.
Well, yeah, and that's what, that's another reason why we keep sticking with South Park, is we always do these side projects where we go and we do Team America or we go do this other stuff. And we always realize, you know, you're sitting on the set of Team America trying to make a puppet, like, lift his hand and the string keeps breaking and you're just like, oh my God. And you're burning like $150,000 a day and there's so much pressure. And you're like, why aren't we just at South Park?
Yeah.
Why aren't we just like 5 minutes from my house at that office with all of our friends, and it's really fun and we get to do whatever we want? Like, why are we here? Why are we screwing around with this stuff, you know? So yeah. Every time we go try to do something else, that world that we've set up creatively, we can do whatever we want. We do the voice. It can't compete. It's the best job in Hollywood. I'm convinced. I think me and Trey have the best job in Hollywood.
I think
we really do. Like, I mean, it sucks when I'm there, you know, we have to work our long hours, but creatively, it just doesn't get any better.
The thing I'm envious of is that you guys have reached that Howard Stern, Charles Barkley zone. And it happened a lot.
So
it
I get drunk five, and look 6 years. For a hooker and get away with it.
No, yeah. Not that part. The part where you could really tackle anything and say anything and people would be like, yeah, it's South Park. It's all right.
Yeah.
But you can really cross any line you want to within relative reason, but.
Yeah, for some reason, people go, oh, you can't get mad at that. That's just South Park.
Yeah, Howard Stern was like the first guy who reached that and could literally do anything on his show. And people are like, wow, it's Stern.
We do stuff all the time. The trainer are like, wow, is that going to be okay?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's South Park. It's funny. You're right.
I remember there was.
But that's what it should. By the way, and Stern is cool because he really has embodied this, even though I don't listen to him all the time and stuff. Over the years, he seems to embody this, which is, and I think Trey and I have too, although we didn't really think about it at the time. You know, when you get to the financial part is working, where you're getting paid good money, what it should do is make the art better, or it should embolden you to do it more of what you want instead of less.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, a lot of artists, a lot of musicians, you start making the money and you start getting addicted to the money or whatever. And like, you can't. Then you're like, well, then I don't want to piss anybody off because I like my position in life.
Right.
When really, what it should be is like, oh, sweet. Now I'm safe and I don't need another, I don't have to like worry about a job, you know, for the next year. So let's go. So once you get that kind of financial independence and security, it should make your art better. But for a lot of people, it doesn't.
Yeah,
but for us, I think it did. It gave us the FU money. Like, we have that. So like, we can go do what stuff we want. You know, and we don't really have to worry about, oh my God, what if South Park ends, I need to get a job next year, you know, and I'm going to be worried about that. So luckily for us, we've gotten to that point. And I think probably Stern has too, where he's like, I actually don't care.
Mm.
I actually just think this is cool and funny. And I don't really care if you don't, you know what I mean? I mean, we do care if people think it's funny, obviously. That's a setup, but you know,
it's, you make a good point about that. It can be liberating.
It should be.
But sometimes it can also be dangerous, and I won't name any movie people, but we've seen in movies where somebody who gets a lot of leeway. Actually, Eddie Murphy's a good example. You're doing great. You reach the point where they're like, "All right, Eddie, here's a big check. Do whatever you want," and it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
But for you guys have always been more. You're so wrapped up in just whatever the next episode is or whatever you're doing next that you haven't really been like, eh. Like, you still care.
Right. Well, also, we have this great, that's not to say South Park at some point is just, for us personally, of course, not for what it is for other people, but for me and Trey personally.
Yeah.
It's a means to be creative. It's a vehicle to be creative.
It's a vessel.
It's a vessel, right? And so, it's just too bad that Eddie Murphy, who I love Eddie Murphy, Raw is one of my favorite things of all time.
Yeah.
And Delirious is one of my favorite things of all time, but Raw, seriously, it's to me, is the best thing human beings have ever produced on Earth. It's the Sistine Chapel, I swear.
Yeah.
If I met God and he said, like, well, I gave you all this stuff, like, what do you have to show for yourself, humanity? I'd be like, you should watch Eddie Murphy's Raw. I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
There's something about that just hit me between the eyes at the right time. I've watched it maybe 1,000 times. I love it. And he's done other great stuff, too. And even watching, like, Bowfinger. Remember that movie with
Steve Martin?
Martin? It's like... And I love Steve Martin back in the day too, but Steve Martin, that movie makes me, I watch every frame of it that he's in. I want to grit my teeth, and every frame of it that Eddie Murphy's in is strangely compelling.
Mm.
And I just think that Eddie Murphy is like a super talented, I mean, that's a dumb thing to say, but like, I love that guy. But then you watch what he does now for the last whatever many years and you're like, what are you doing? Why are you, you know, but he had that vessel, whatever it is, why wouldn't be an animated show, but something that like, to on a regular level,
became
creative,
too famous,
be creative and safe and have, you know, and be respected. But he could. Maybe he just likes Neat Dave.
It's funny because I watched Boomerang. I was sick last week and Boomerang was on. I was watching. I was thinking, like, it's the last Eddie Murphy movie I really liked.
It was the last Eddie Murphy movie that I went to going, oh, Eddie Murphy has a new movie out. And
yeah.
You're like, and there's like good stuff in it, but you know, towards the end you're like, okay, you know, and then.
But it was still Eddie, like when he had his swagger.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened to that guy, but.
I don't know what happened to that guy.
But you know, the difference maybe with you and Trey is that Eddie is like, can't leave his house and he's swarmed. And
sure.
But
and
you
that
guys
makes, that makes
relatively,
you
people know, you know, the fans of the show know what you look like, but I don't think like, if you went to dinner, that's not like the restaurant would stop.
No.
You're like, oh, those guys. You're kind of like anonymous famous.
We have the perfect level of fame. It's really cool for the most part. Like Trey and I really, we get recognized by some people and they're usually fans. You're like, oh, hey, you know. But we can also live our lives and go do whatever. We're not like, Eddie Murphy or one of these really famous people.
Do you think that the fact that
there's no way that wouldn't make you nuts.
Yeah, you go crazy.
You go nuts, you know.
Do you think the fact that there's two of you and that you have you can share all the experiences and you're collaborating all the time and it's so much fun for you to collaborate, maybe that keeps you grounded?
A little bit, yeah. Because like we didn't hit until we were like 27. We probably got kind of famous when we were like 27.
Yeah.
And there were two of us. So you got to watch. There was an instant mirror. I'd be like, wow, I wonder if I'm, you know, Trey could watch me and I could watch Trey. You know, it's a little bit of like, there's somebody else kind of going through the, you know, the exact play. You go, wow, that's lame what he did. Or that's, you know, and he's watching me going, oh, that's lame what he did. You know what I mean? And then you can kind of, help balance, you know, be a balance.
Why is he wearing a smoking jacket? That makes no sense at all.
Does he think that's cool? And then you look down and you see yourself in a smoking jacket going, I have a smoking jacket on. What am I doing here? You know? And also we were 27. Like when you see someone like a Britney or even Eminem, I don't know how old Eminem was.
I don't remember,
but like somebody just gets super famous at 20.
Young. Yeah.
Write them off. You're done.
And then amazingly, that also
you start
works
working on
the
grave. You can just start working on the gravestone, just like well,
yeah,
get going on it because, like, you know,
yeah, I would never have a child.
No.
One of my children be like.
That's why I think actually the most evil person on the earth is Sharon Osbourne, because Trey and I met the Osbourne kids and ages ago before the Osbournes, before he had his big coming, you know, before the Osbourne came back.
Yeah,
and Black Sabbath is doing a reunion tour. And they said, hey, do you and Trey want to interview the original members of Black Sabbath? And we're like, yeah, that sounds sweet, right? So Ozzy showed up and Sharon was there and the two kids. And this was when they were like 10 years old.
Yeah.
Jack and what's
Kelly.
Name? Kelly. They were the smartest, coolest, well-behaved 10, 11-year-olds. And all the week I think was like, God, Ozzy's kids are really cool and smart. How did that happen, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've known Jack a little bit and Jack a little bit over the years, and like he's continued to be a really smart, cool kid. He really is a cool guy. But there's no way that if your mom puts you on television when you're 15, that you're definitely going to rehab.
In a reality show.
Yeah, a reality show. That's just like, and when they did it for the first year and it was kind of a lark, and then it kind of was like, that was like, oh, that's weird and funny. And then the fact that they took it and then re-upped and tried to do seasons 2 and 3, and it's all your kids, man. What are you doing?
You say you don't think Denise Richards' kids are going to turn out to a?
Is she going to do a reality show? Though?
She already did one. She had one on E! And she's dragging her kids around.
Yeah, it's just like, no. But it's really irresponsible for teenagers. You know what I mean? So somehow I think Ozzy wasn't involved with it. I've just projected this all on Sharon Osbourne because she seems like the ambitious.
I don't think Ozzy knows where he is.
I think Ozzy knows where he is. But like once you see your kids are on MTV, don't put them on MTV again. You know.
Yeah, I think that's a good rule.
They're going to get screwed up. And they did. And now they probably come out the other side and they're okay, but that's not cool.
Well, you guys, so you the show hits big.
Yeah.
There's the predictable backlash, which always has to happen after you survive that. Now the show's on. It's just this engine. It's been running the whole decade.
Yeah.
This is the end of season 13.
Yeah.
So now it happens.
Well, we should have skipped season 13 and just gone to season 14, like a building.
Like a hotel?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that idea.
We should have just done it, but we didn't. Just like... the season 13's gone pretty well so far. I don't know. We're going to keep doing
this.
Just
going down and not even think about it.
Maybe that's all we'll ever do. You know, there's that part too where you get over it. You used to, you know, there's a part where you go, well, we're more than the South Park guys. Like, we don't just do South Park. You know, we're comedy. We do this and we do that. And you get this little, fans do it all the time too of like, you know, we're not just that. We're this, you know.
It's like the old stay your lane line.
Yeah. It's like
Jeff Ross, got to stay your lane.
Well, that we figured that out on our own, you know, but there was a lot of voices, you know, again, it's just that thing of like, well, I don't want to be only known as a South Park guy. But then you look at like someone like John Cleese, and he's like the Monty Python guy. He's done all sorts of other stuff. He's only on this show for 4 years.
Yeah.
Who cares? And it's like at a certain point you go, okay, I'm a South Park guy. That's it. And it doesn't matter what I do from now on forever. Either it's something great or something not great. I'll always be the South Park guy. And once you get over that, then it's like, we have the greatest job in the world. So stick with it.
You wrote a musical.
We have been writing a musical. Yeah. With,
you're working on it.
Yeah. We've been working on that. Trey and, Bobby Lopez, who, wrote songs in Avenue Q. He and Trey are the songwriters, and me and Trey and Bobby are writing the story and everything and producing it. And it is good and hard work.
Yeah.
But it's good. I really like it. Like, and I don't really talk about like, even from this podcast, or I don't sit around and go, oh, our stuff is great. But this is like, to me, I really like what we're doing with this thing. And I don't know what it will turn of it. If it will be an off Broadway thing, off Broadway turning into Broadway. I'd like to see it go to Broadway. That's what that's what we want to do.
So how long does the process take?
Well, we've been working on it for like 4 years off and on, but we just kind of work for a week and then we don't, and then, work for 2 weeks. So this summer we put on some read-throughs in New York and worked on it, which is a totally different, way of working than sitting in a room with Trey at 3 o'clock in the morning being like, okay, what about a fart? And then, so it's a little bit different, but I really like it. It's cool. It's good.
So you do that, maybe a movie? Another movie?
We might make a movie out of it. Or out of that, or a different movie.
No, a different movie.
Maybe, but movies are hard.
You don't like the movie process.
Movies are like, yeah, like the 3-year movie process is pretty brutal. It's pretty brutal to come up with a joke, write a joke, and then 3 years later be filming that joke. And then 6 months after that be editing that joke. You just don't think it's funny anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the way we do South Park. There's like, by the time a show airs, we still think it's really funny.
Yeah.
We're still like, hey, that's funny. Yeah. Cause we're not sick of it yet. Cause we've only been doing it a week or two. But a movie's just, they're grueling. We haven't had the same success in movies. And yeah, I don't know. And here's what it is. I mean, if you ever worked for movie stuff, you work for TV stuff. You've never worked on movie, right?
Have you? I've never worked on a movie, no.
So movies are like, you work on a movie for three or four years and it comes out, and that all your success is based on that opening weekend.
Yeah.
So it's basically like everyone who works on movies has sex once every 4 years, and it's amazing or not. But they are stressed, and they carry themselves like people who have sex once every 4 years. Everything is like Armageddon. Every week is like Armageddon times five. And when you work with TV people, it's like, yeah, TV show. I mean, and by the way, you might have an opening weekend where you do $30 million, and if you equal that out, maybe 4 million people went and saw the movie. I don't know what I'm making up numbers. But if in one episode of, we have 3 million people or 2 million people watch an episode of South Park. And that's not even a big rated show. Something like 2 and a Half Men, a great show, like 2 and a Half Men,
Have you seen Charlie's hair this year?
You mean his hair cap?
Charlie bought like Al Pacino's hair from Heat on eBay, and he's just wearing it.
He got the plastic hair cap that he had, and he puts it on his hair.
It's unbelievable.
It's on his head. But 2 and a Half Men is like 15 million people watch it. It's like you get this, the same number of people are seeing it. So everyone who works in TV kind of is used to having sex all the time. They just have sex once a week. You know what I mean? So they're normal. They're kind of like, okay, we'll get the show on the air. Believe it or not, it's much more relaxed than movies, than the movie business.
Have your numbers from Comedy Central, have they gone down or up?
Well, they kind of squiggle around. But
because in 97, you guys start, Comedy Central's not as big of a
deal. Oh, yeah, but then we went through the roof ratings-wise. Then we came back down.
And there are less channels. You had less competition.
Yeah.
Now you have 500 channels.
Now we get like a between a 2 and a 3, which means, I don't even know what that means. It's between 2 and 3 million people.
You were the channel's basically the first hit thing they did.
Yeah, probably. First thing that they did.
Because before you, it was the SNL reruns. That was really the only reason to go there.
AbFab. This was like, they had Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yeah, Mystery Science Theater. I forgot. But that was a cult hit. The SNL reruns were kind of the meal ticket for a long time.
And then a lot of stand-up. And then they had The Daily Show, but starring...
But then when Stewart took
before
off.
Before Stewart, yeah.
Kilborn and then...
Kilborn, yeah.
But when Stewart took off, that pushed the... Now it's like, and it feels like it's
and
one
Chappelle,
of...
When Chappelle was on for like
next,
3 years.
Then Colbert.
That was the golden... It was like The Daily Show was hitting, Chappelle was killing, and then they put us in the same hour as Chappelle, which was great. And then our numbers went up because Chappelle was so good. And then it was like this great hour.
Black people are like, what's this show?
Yeah. Well, yeah, what's this funny cartoon?
It's on every time.
And then Dave,
that was it for Dave.
He took a trip. There's been two times, one time in particular, whenever Trey and I had some problem with the network, and we wanted something and they didn't want us and blah, blah, blah. We had a little tiff. And so Trey and I went on Orbitz and got two tickets to Durban, South Africa. I got our reservations and sent it to the president of Comedy Central.
that's
always like our nuclear, like, we could just go to South Africa. And we actually thought about how funny it would be
to just go
to South Africa. And then, hey, we're in Durban.
Bring two flip cameras.
Just go pray with, you know, whatever Chappelle's doing.
That's great. I love that idea.
That was so sad when he left. That was still like, just for me, like, I love that show and I loved him. And like, and by the way, it was great for us too, ratings wise. And
he's another example of the whole fame thing.
Yeah.
The kid, he just, a lot of different pressures, but I mean, it's just, I think that show almost became too popular.
It was just too brilliant. There was some really brilliant, feared
Machant. The cool thing though is that he skipped the whole part where he skipped the backlash part.
Yeah.
He just had the good show and then it ended.
And then he just flew right in.
Yeah. He's like, all right, I'll see you later.
He just like Sid Barrett. Sid Barrett of comedy a little bit. And I don't know him, and I think he's probably doing fine now and everything, but there's that feeling if he got a little too close to the sun. He took a little bit too much red acid. Like, just got a little bit too much. But no, and not just to, like, in a fame way, but there was some hard truths in that show, and there was some, like, real brilliant writing. And, you know, you can go, I don't want to say you can go a little crazy messing with that stuff, but he was dealing with dangerous subject matter and doing such a good job at it that you got the feeling it's a little bit like, what did he see? Like, you know what I mean?
Did he like the astronaut's wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Saw something weird.
Like he was Roy Scheider in 2010 and he looked into the, was that it? Yeah. And he looked into the obelisk and is like,
yeah,
you know, like, what did he see? I really feel like there was a little bit of that with him that like, it was just, he saw some clarity that maybe we don't even understand.
Do you guys feel like when that show started to hit, were you like, oh, we got to pressure up your game? Or you're just screw it.
A little bit, but in a fun way. In a way that gives you a little bit of like, you know, you're always looking for things that motivate you. So like recently it's been like, you know, it's like if you can use like anything happening with Family Guy to kind of light a fire under your own ass, like use it. You know, who cares? It's all delusion anyway, because none of it really matters. You know, it's like anything you do in comedy, especially, it's like we just do make a cartoon. Like, it is that dumb. But you have to convince yourself you're saving the world, because it's hard. It's just hard to get up in the morning and go to work. You have to really pretend like it's super important, even though it's not. You know what I mean? That's where I think a lot of Hollywood, like, because I actually really don't. I think a lot of Hollywood kind of loses their mind in that exact little gap. You have to always keep in mind you're just making television. You're not curing cancer. You're not fighting a war. You're not doing anything important. But if you think that, you'll never do anything good. So you have to kind of like trick yourself all the time into thinking you're really, really important and what you're doing is really, really important for the world, you know, so you can actually make some good stuff, but you don't actually. Does that make sense? Kind of?
Totally.
You know what I mean? So that's like I think that's half of our attitude towards,
you're talking to a guy who spends two solid days writing an NFL picks column.
You can't, like, you have to keep it. But if you think about, you have to think about it on grandiose levels to do a good job, you know?
Oh, I think my picks columns are the most important thing that anybody's writing that week.
It moves millions of dollars in Vegas.
Affects the world.
Yeah, it's the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, so like our job is to fart in their face a little bit.
Well, you did a two-part episode once about them.
About Family Guy, but I mean, just fart in anybody's face. So like Clooney.
Well, Family Guy bugs you though.
Family Guy, but it's a thing that's just like, okay, well, let's just like, well, there's something different. Family Guy is funny because it's like, it's so tacky and never done to rip on another show like that.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so funny for us to do, because it's so obviously lame and unsportsmanlike, but
there was still like a little bit of,
it's funny about it.
Last decade, it was like when you knew Pearl Jam didn't really like Stone Temple Pilots. Yeah. Then this decade, it's like when the Killers got mad at the Bravery. Yeah. I hate the Bravery.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that element to it.
Yeah. Just like, okay, guys. Like, you're all the same, kind of. Like, what do you
call it? Yeah.
It's such a nuanced thing of like, no, we're not like them. You know, we use synthesizers. You know, it's like something like that, you know.
Our writing's pure, man.
Totally different, dude.
Yeah.
I just think that about, like, a lot of, yeah. So we do it like anybody else does.
I felt kind of torn up about that because I do enjoy Family Guy.
You do.
And I enjoy your show, too. Well, I like Family Guy because of the pop culture stuff.
Right. They do a lot of pop culture stuff. They just don't do it very well.
It's a way to my heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't put it on the level of the South Park. Because I'm always...
Because you're sitting here.
No. Because I'm just a fan of original over the people that piggyback the original. I've always been like that with anything.
Right.
That's why I don't like Dennis Leary.
Oh, interesting. I don't really know...
Dennis Leary in the BS
I don't
report.
Really know much about him.
Well, he kind of did Bill Hicks after Bill Hicks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, I can't... No, that's it for me.
Once you know Bill
I'm
Hicks
out.
And once you've
I really
Bill
like
Hicks.
Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
And it's
are you thinking
know.
Dennis Leary killed Bill Hicks?
No. As far as I don't know. I mean, like, Dennis Leary's talented, but I won't watch Rescue Me because I even got the DVD and I watched like 3 episodes and the Bill Hicks thing, I just couldn't get past. I'm like really petty with
that. Yeah, no, why not be?
Yeah, why not?
But why not be?
We only have one life.
Yeah.
All right. So October 7th.
7th or 8th. I don't know. Whatever the Wednesday.
It's going to be October 7th because I think that's the, 30 for 30 on ESPN, which you'll enjoy.
Oh, yeah.
Premieres on October 6th, and Tuesday.
Oh, that's Tuesday. Okay, so it's October 7th.
I told them we're not going head to head against South Park. I can't do that.
We'll get killed.
Is there any topics you definitely want to hit this year or no? Anybody in the firing range?
We want to do something about Harley riders and Harley Davidsons.
Oh.
Yeah. And how awesome they are when they pull up next to you and you can't talk for 2 minutes. Or how when a Harley goes down the street in New York City. When a Harley goes down 3rd Avenue or like a big or a street, let's say, in New York City, I'd like to know how many thousands of people's moments get screwed up. You know what I mean?
It's almost like a flyby by a fighter jet.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. It's like if you flew a 747 down 21st Street in New York City, how many thousands of people would have to stop their conversation, put their baby back to sleep, whatever it is. And just the extreme neediness of Harley riders and how needy they are. Just how I'd just rather they have a big neon sign that says, look at me. Aren't I cool? You know what I mean? Do you like my little stupid helmet? Is this making enough noise? Look at me. Look at me. You
this
know?
Is the most danger you've been in since your Scientology.
So this will get us killed.
Yeah.
This will get us killed. Because we don't really want to make a big difference between the weekend warriors and like the actual meth pushing, like real guys.
Yeah.
No, they're all needy and they all need to put them just.
This could be bad. Even Hunter Thompson got beaten up once by the Hells Angels.
Yeah.
They don't discriminate.
I think this will be the one. You know, like we kind of thought it was Scientologists, Scientologists were going to, I was afraid they were going to throw some poison meat over my fence or my dog because there were rumors of them.
They're still
playing
in
their attack. I was like, when before the Kanye episode came out, I was like, dude, I don't know, man. I don't know Kanye, but like, I just know hip hop guys they don't screw around. And they're not, it's not a scene that like takes gay jokes well.
Right.
You know, hip hop, not cool. Like gay hip hop, not cool.
Yeah.
So I was like, this could be it. And Saddam, we thought for a while, that could be it, And, that seems quaint now, but at the time, you're thinking, Saddam's going to get us killed. And it'll probably be Harley riders. I'll be in a biker bar somewhere, and I'll forget, and I'll just get my ass kicked, and that'll be it.
You need to go after David Stern if you really want to have your life ended. That's the guy who'll do it.
He'll take you out.
No, but in all seriousness, I do think like a Stern – how many sports episodes have you done?
We haven't done a basketball. We did a baseball one, losing season, the one where they try to lose because they don't want to play anymore.
The Little League Dad, right? Yeah, they're fighting in the bleachers.
They're fighting the Bat Dad.
And I love that one.
Yeah. And then we did a hockey episode where the kid dies at the end.
What season was the Little League one?
Oh, gosh, probably 4 or 5 years ago.
That's in the pantheon for me. I love anything with Little League Dad
violence.
Did you
like the end
violence?
Of that movie? Where the end of that movie was just the end of a different movie? We just took the end of Mighty Ducks and So like all the kids are looking at it. It's like there's a beautiful, awesome end with these two guys hugging and you don't know whose it is. It's like an ending of a totally different show. I thought that was pretty funny. So we did that. We haven't done a basketball. We thought about doing a golf episode because now at least I play golf. Trades kind of plays golf too. And we thought, God, that would be showing our age. As soon as you do a golf episode, it's like, wow. Like, where's your mind at? You know what I mean?
Did you think about touching Kobe?
No, we didn't. Because it's like, I don't know. That's the kind of thing. It's like,
the Kobe.
Actually, we did try because it was like, it's not far from South Park, actually, where he was tried. I mean, it's a way, it's an hour drive. But we talked about that. But
you said the people there, I asked you about this, and you said the people in Eagle, Colorado, it's like a badge of honor for them.
Yeah.
They like it.
That's Eagle, baby. Not Vail. That's not Vail. That's Eagle. because Eagle's like this town that's just next to Vail.
Because we talked about, like, in Brentwood, they get, at least when I moved here in 02, I'd meet somebody from Brentwood. I'd be like, OJ. And they'd be like, they'd grit their teeth. Be so angry about it. He hasn't lived for 8 years.
There's so much more to Brentwood, damn it, than OJ. And Brentwood has so much to offer. Brentwood.
You know. We have some of the best schools in California. Yeah, and an Eagle. No, opposite. Oh, yeah. Because it's part of Vail, and they like the fact that they got their own little attention out of it. You know who would be a good episode? I'm sure you hate when people suggest episodes, but Jordan's Hall of Fame speech almost seemed like it was something like right out of South Park.
Yeah, I didn't see it. What I heard
you might
about
have
it,
to YouTube it. You might get some creative inspiration.
How was it really? What was it about it? That was it.
It was 20 minutes long. It was just like just bitter, him settling
really
weird grudges. And at one point, he's like, he just looks over at his kids. He's like, I feel sorry for you guys. Just like basically apologizing for
such
what a bad
a big
dad
come down?
Is
it just such a big come down to come off of that career and just like, what does life have to offer? Like, what could you possibly do in life after?
I think we found out this decade from him.
Yeah. I mean,
he has not figured out how to match.
How to be happy.
The feeling of coming into an arena and having 17,000 cameras go off and people reacting to you like you're some sort of god.
That's so sad.
He's a sad guy.
Yeah,
and
it's really sad. Because he was so awesome. He had the picture perfect, not really picture perfect, but like he defined so many things, you know? And then to not just be able to be happy, you know, like I don't want to say Barkley looks like a real happy guy. Like, is he happy? Is he perfect? Does he have all his demons? No, taken care of? No, but like he seems like he's a guy that can be happy.
Here's the problem though. It's Jordan. The main reason over every other reason that he succeeded was he was the most competitive MF-er ever any sport that we've ever seen. And you can't turn it off. Yeah, you don't retire and just be like, I'm going to turn off that switch now. Like, I think he watches these games and I think he wants to come back. I think he's like
horrible.
Michael Corleone. Like, he just has this evil look on his face.
Yeah.
And then he goes crazy.
Watch LeBron dunk and then he gets up and then a hip hurts and he's,
I think he came back, in my opinion, with the Wizards because he would run into these guys, like Iverson or Paul Pierce or the guys who would become the new kind of guard. And these guys would be like, yeah, you're lucky you're not playing anymore. And he would just, be like Michael Myers. What do you mean what do you mean you're glad I don't play anymore? You're saying that I couldn't play right now? And he just like lost his mind and eventually decided to come back.
Yeah.
And they talked at the Hall of Fame thing about how he was joking how, at 50 he'd want to come back. And they were like, we're not even sure he was joking. Like, if anyone would ever come back at age 50, if he'd been a boxer, he would have had 14 comebacks.
Right. He'd be that guy.
He'd be Muhammad Ali. He'd be basically brain damaged and a mess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Ali had the same competitiveness.
Yeah, it's so sad that like you could do all that and then just not learn how to be happy.
It's got a lot of demons.
It kind of goes along with that thing that I sent you that statistic that 75% of the NFL is bankrupt or the NFL players are bankrupt 3 years after retirement or in serious financial trouble. And it's the same thing where you just now I'm a football star, so the rest of life is like this basically, and it's like no.
Yeah, you're gonna have a long life actually.
Yeah, you just
and you're
like,
not going to make this much money.
Yeah, and the adulation will stop. And like to not have any proactive sense of foresight is, or like Jordan to be like, sweet, I'm going to the end of my career, and now I'm going to what? You know, and it can't be your answer to that question can't be dunk the basketball and fly through. You know what I mean? It's like now you're 38, now you got to move on, and it's just like so tragic. People like that can't just be happy because but what could stack up to his life?
Nothing.
He's still running from himself.
Kind of a weird comparison to that would be, I would say, Clinton.
Yeah.
This guy became president and then ran out of presidential years at a relatively young age.
Yeah.
And he's involved in a lot of stuff, and I think he loves what he's doing and all that. But I guarantee he's just bummed out all the time that he can't be.
I think he's so competitive.
Major leader.
He's a little bummed out. But basically, I do think being Bill Clinton right now would be the greatest thing in the world.
Just getting paid for speeches.
Oh, just getting
pushing
paid.
Charity.
Private planes with chicks on it, and that it's like, I don't have any proof, but I don't even know the way to say this, like not R-rated, right? It's like Sex Fest, 2009 up in the, those chartered 747s. I mean, that's a good life, and he's far, a lot of these countries, he's far away and he still gets to be involved in whatever things he cares about. But he, I think he gets
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, but he'd rather be the
president. I think he gets a lot of the applause in the camera snaps and stuff. Yes, but it's like one of those. It's like he has an amazing ocean view suite, but there's a guy in the presidential suite, and he's super pissed off about that. But he has a pretty sweet deal, you know.
But he's still thinking about the guy in the presidential suite.
Yeah, but he has a bunch of chicks and a bunch of stuff in his own junior suite with an ocean view, you know.
I think he has fantasies about, like, especially during the Bush era, like, somebody says, just he probably has dreams where somebody's like, ah, the Bush-Cheney thing's not working. We're going to need you back.
Yeah.
When can you get here? Tomorrow!
I guess I was joking, like,
8 o'clock!
We've been talking about this with an episode that starts with Jesus, but it would work with Bill Clinton, where he's up chopping wood in Alaska, and they have to show up with the thing. The beginning of Firefox, that old Clint Eastwood movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where he's chopping wood, and they show up. It was a Mark Wahlberg movie that started this way not too long ago.
Shooter.
He's chopping wood, and they show him. They go, Bill, we need you back. And he's like, I gave that up. And like, we need you. You know, we've got these two
Why?
Guys.
You're the best.
You're the best.
Corolla. This is like Corolla's favorite.
You can think in Russian. Or whatever. Come on, Clinton. And he puts his shirt off, and the kids come out. Daddy, back inside, kids.
Yeah.
You know, all right. I'll do it. You know.
Corolla and I always talked about writing a movie just called, like, You're the Best or whatever. Because he's obsessed with this whole thing about just the guy who's the best, but it's something, like, totally random. Like, you're the best sniper from 300 yards away.
Yeah. But you gave it up because of something happened.
Gave it back because somebody nudged your elbow and you ended up shooting some innocent security guard.
You ended up shooting your wife. You know what I mean? You ended up shooting your wife. Wasn't your fault, you know? Bill, it wasn't your fault.
It's like Cliffhanger starts out that way. He's trying to say the idiot guy has his wife doing the weird rock thing, and she's trapped, and she's on the rope, and Sly goes out without harness to get her, and
no!
He can't save her, and the guy's mad at her after.
Did you like the new Star Trek movie?
I didn't see it. I'm gonna wait to
the new Star Trek movie.
Did they rip it off?
The beginning of that movie has it's not exactly on par, but it's the most extreme example of like. Just starting with an event to pack the most emotion and unleavened sentimentality into like, like 3 minutes of film. And it just is unbelievable the way they said, go, you know, this is the defining moment of his life was like when he was born. It's you got to see it. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
That's your start for basketball. Basketball too.
No, we talked about, I'd be chopping wood and Trey would show up and he'd be all in military gear. He's like, we need you back. The Russians have developed a way to play basketball. And
it's better than us.
Whatever. To think in pure basketball terms or whatever. And I'm like, I gave that up. And he's like, damn it. You're the only person who can blow it. And we just do that whole scene because the Russians have figured out a way to think in basketball or something.
That'd be the North Koreans.
Yeah, the North Koreans.
The North Koreans have some new revolutionary basketball system.
But I killed Dean playing basketball one time, and now I don't want to play anymore.
To give you the flashback? See, yeah. Here we go. Basketball 2.
Basketball 2.
All right, Matt Stone. We're gonna have to do two parts. We're gonna have to record a little two-parter thing.
Okay.
A little two-parter intro. But so October 7th, South Park. Thanks so much for
cool,
being
man.
On the Subway Fresh Take Hotline in person.
Cool, man. Thanks.
All right.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.